Hello, this is Jay Nemro. You're listening to Life Autistic. This is episode number 723. It's been an interesting morning. I just finished up a job in Fort Sumner, and boy, I come back this morning. I get to work this morning at the office, and apparently everything that I did in Fort Sumner has just completely fallen apart. You know, and frankly, you know, I always have to try to separate myself from these situations because I get kind of torqued at myself. Well, mostly at the equipment for not making me look good, you know. So, I'm on the road again, going to Fort Sumner to see what the heck is going on there and what I can do. All right, so, this morning, I wake up. It's a Friday morning. We don't tend to get up as early on Friday. Brenna didn't have a seminary at the LDS Church. Young people between 14 and 18 go to seminary, mostly high school age kids. And it isn't like a Catholic seminary. It's, I don't know why we call it seminary particularly, because it all, you know, it's like, why do you bother using a word everybody else uses? It's like a religious high school class. You know, for 4 years you learn about basically four different big subjects, and they're mostly based around religious texts, the person's Old Testament, New Testament, Book of Mormon, and church history, which isn't really a book, you know, but, you know, it kind of goes along with the Doctrine and Covenants a little bit. So she wasn't having seminary, and so we didn't have to get up very early at all. In fact, the only person we had to get up for at all was me, so I could get off before, you know, so I could get in the car and get to work on time. But I was listening, and we typically do, I do have my own radio station at home, but sometimes it's not as reliable as I would like. It's pretty good, though. It's pretty good. It kind of switches between BYU Radio and BBC World Service. And so, under good circumstances, we would wake up to BYU Radio, you know, kind of like, I am a child of God type stuff, you know. Not too punchy. That's the problem with our local public radio station, is that they have a classical music thing, and sometimes it's really, you know, it really varies a whole lot. Sometimes they'll have real punchy, loud music. Sometimes you'll have opera, which Lisa can't stand, especially when it's not in English. So that was one of the impetuses. Besides the fact that we have the internet at home and I feel like it's underutilized, that we bring in this other stuff through the internet and then I put it out on the airwaves. And it's our own little radio station. It doesn't broadcast, but inside the house. I don't even think the next door neighbor can really pick it up, which is fine because, you know, I always get worried about offending people. And I find out that people really don't care, and that's kind of a good thing, because then I can just say what I want to say, and they can say, I don't agree with that, and then we can go on with our lives. But at least I would have said something. This podcast is partly a way to kind of get out there with Jay, with my ideas, you know, the Zenith stuff, politics, whatever, so that I might get a little more bold about just talking about it in general. I think if people know what they're going to, what they can expect to have from someone, it makes me feel a lot better. When I was a missionary, I was okay with that, and I could talk about missionary stuff, you know, and I could be pretty bold about it, just simply because people knew where, you know, I wore a name tag. They knew that when I came, it was like, hi, my name's Jane Emerald, and I represent the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. People knew that I was a missionary and what I was going to be talking about, or at least had some idea. You know, it wasn't like, whoa, that was out of left field. Whoa, I can't handle that, you know. I don't know you anymore type stuff. You don't have to get that. So I guess this podcast and other things, some of the writing that I do, is almost kind of introductory to me, so that when I say what I say, when people say, well, here's where we come from, it's not so, I don't feel like I'm stomping all over everybody. I worry that I do that. And so people know right off the bat, boy, you know, Jay comes in, he's got really strong feelings about a lot of things. And as you know those things, it's okay. You go, oh, I know where Jay's going to go with this because I know what kind of a guy Jay is. That makes me feel more comfortable because I don't like to offend people. I really abhor offending people. And that's what kind of holds me back a whole lot. I tend to be a really poor missionary-minded Mormon for the simple reason that I don't like throwing it out there. You know, I don't want to offend anybody. And I find that's a problem. I need to get over that. And I guess this is my way of kind of working on that, is doing these podcast episodes. I'm listening to NPR because you can't really, because sometimes the radio station hasn't worked well, and we kind of depend upon the fact that it works on a pretty regular basis. So, woke up and listening to NPR. Well, apparently Proposition 8 in California, which was a referendum on gay marriage, came up in the news story, in the news that was on. And they went out and they interviewed people. They were surrounding a Mormon temple in California to protest the fact that the Mormon Church had been very strongly supportive of a ban on gay marriage. And of course, you know, the whole thing's going around, you know, bigots and things like that. I don't know what they were saying. They were certainly expressing their displeasure with the church bringing pressure to bear on a political issue. And let me say this, the church rarely gets involved in any political issue. They certainly do not back candidates. No matter what, you know, even if they're Mormon, the Mormon Church did not back, Mitt Romney. There was no official statement. There was nothing read from pulpits anywhere to say, boy, you better vote for Mitt Romney. It just wasn't there. Now, on some issues that are of deep importance to the church as a whole and to the Mormon people, and frankly, to the kingdom of God, we do. You know, the Mormon Church came up strongly against state lotteries for just the damage that they do to society. But you can't support that. So the church came out, you know, and you might find it really interesting what they come out for, you know, or it's mostly against. All of you know that I, of course, am a liberty-based, liberty-loving, constitutionalist. I support the original Constitution. I support what I think is the original intent of the founders of this country. And course, there's a whole religious aspect that Mormons believe that the United States Constitution was an inspired document, and that in part it was created to allow for the religious freedom that allowed the Mormon Church to rise, to become, and not that the government went to any great lengths to help the church flourish. For Pete's sakes, the government usually sat by while Mormons were getting tortured and killed, and while extermination orders were written by states, the U.S. government just said, you know what, you know, oh, that sounds really bad, but you know what, we're not going to do anything about it. You know, politics was already very important back then, and you didn't go around supporting Mormons because that was a very unpopular thing to do. Anyway, I have to give some more background to the whole concept of why this affected me so much when I heard that gays were trying to, you know, surround a Mormon temple in protest of Mormon support for Proposition 8. You know, and the church asking church members to do so. There are a pretty good population of Mormons in California. It's a significant group. You know, it isn't the largest religion, as far as I'm aware of, in California. I think from when I was a child, I do believe it was second. It was second largest. There's many Mormons in California, but certainly not a majority, but a significant enough number that they could swing stuff one way or another if things were split. You know, kind of like how blacks are. You court for a certain, you know, you court the black vote for the simple reason that these are, you know, this is 10% of the population that tends to vote strongly as a block. You know, it's reliable. If you can get black thought leaders to come your way on something, you've basically got most black people on your side. Very monolithic group of people, which I've always found amazing. In just a racial way, I think it's amazing. You wouldn't catch whites being monolithic on anything. But maybe that comes with being part of a majority, is that once you're a majority, you can express deviant opinions and, you know, you instantly become a minority. But you're not a minority of a minority. That's always a tough thing. Anyway, I don't remember what was really said. I just remember the whole feeling I had about that, you know. People picketing a Mormon temple. Well, isn't that a pretty picture? And what really bothered me the most was I didn't hear, it didn't say, among other things. Like, you know, I would think that they would picket a Catholic cathedral, or, you know, the Crystal Cathedral, you know, which is a really big, huge Pentecostal-ish church. You know, why aren't they doing that? No, they specifically, you know, and I don't know if that didn't happen. It was just this news story. It was set up so that it would be at a Mormon temple. And I found that really telling. I don't know how other people feel about that. But it made me think here. What's going on? What are they trying to accomplish by picking the Mormons? What I would consider to be, honestly, at least from my perspective here in New Mexico, a fringe group. Honestly, a fringe group. We are so few in number, we're almost inconsequential. I've always found it interesting. My wife was at the public pool with our kids. In the past, we used to take our kids to the public pool and, you know, and do swimming lessons. And I guess somebody was there, a lady didn't really identify herself particularly. But it came up that the subject of homeschooling came up between Lisa and this lady. And so it was this wonderful thing, you know, oh, you should come together and we should get together there, play kids play together, you know, stuff like that. Maybe do some stuff together that we, and Lisa was like, well, you know, sure. Yeah. Then the lady brought up the fact that she was the local Baptist minister's wife. It was like, oh, well, that's really nice. You know, Lisa's smart enough in a town like ours, you don't mention your, if you're a Mormon, you don't mention it, you know, it isn't the first thing out of your mouth. Because people will turn and walk away. You know, I'm not going to call people bigots, particularly. You know, people can have their own beliefs about these things. You know, I chose to be a Mormon, so people can choose to say, well, you know, you didn't have to choose that, so I'm not going to... It's much different than being, like, black, for instance. You don't choose to be black. You just kind of get born that way. You know, it comes from your parents, and, you know, your parents can't, for all the work and striving they go through, they can't make you a different color or with a different facial features or whatever else. You know, they can't do that. So it's kind of a, you know, I feel powerless. I wish, you know, well, I don't know. Anyway, Mormons, of course, aren't that way. You know, you can say, I don't believe in that stuff. A lot of people do. A lot of people who are technically on the records of the church as members say, you know, I don't want anything to do with a Mormon church. You know, my parents talked me into getting baptized when I was younger, and now that I'm older and it's not socially acceptable, I decide I'm not going to be a Mormon anymore. You know, it demands too much, whatever. Anyway, so this lady asked my wife, you know, at the pool, asked my wife, hey, you know, what church do you go to? And they said, well, I go to the LDS church. Oh, I've never heard of that one. And, of course, we always have to specify because many people only know us by the appellation Mormon. So, I said, well, it's the Mormon church. And, boy, let me tell you, this lady just clammed up. And it was over, you know. Didn't happen. Walked off. And, of course, nothing happened for the homeschooling business because I'm sure this lady was a very, you know, good at what would be considered Christian homeschooling. And you come to find out that Christian homeschooling has a pretty heavy anti-Mormon facet to it sometimes. Not always. Sometimes. Often enough that you almost say, are you a Christian homeschooler? And if they say yes, you might as well just go ahead and say, you know, let's just kind of back, you know, I have learned over the years that, you know, Christians are not my friends. And it isn't because I'm not, you know, I'm not, I don't consider it to be my fault, you know, that Christians aren't my friends. It's usually because they find out I'm a Mormon and then it's like, I can't be around you. I don't want my kids talking to your kids. Stuff like that. It's like, okay. So I've kind of gotten really standoffish about anybody who makes it a point of calling themselves a Christian or seeming like making it a big part of their lives because, you know, by and large, I don't get treated well by people who profess heavily being Christian or Baptist or whatever else. You know, you don't see Methodists going out saying, hi, I'm a Methodist and I'm glad to be, you know, because that's just not the type of people they tend to be. You know, Baptists tend to wear their belief system on their sleeve. And I live in a place where Mormons are a distinct minority. I think it's funny when the Baptists just jump all over the Mormons, like, say, in my town, because it's like, you know, there's like, 4,000, or no, I'm probably not. There's 1,000 of you, and there's 60 of us. And yet you feel the need to talk us down and trash us, and you go, you know what? We don't even hardly exist here. We're not even here. So, I come at all these things as, you know, we're a fringe group. I don't even know why people even talk about Mormons, especially on, you know, national media. I think it's almost kind of funny. Now, you know, there was Mitt Romney. He ran for president. Most people probably, and it's probably a fair assessment, it's probably right, say, yeah, he wasn't going to be president because he's Mormon, and people just aren't going to vote for a Mormon. Just too weird, too different. Of course, we don't, you know, it's like, what? Most of the time, if we don't tell you we're Mormons, you'd never know. We don't dress like Mennonites. You know, we don't do weird things. You know, someday you might be able to tell us apart because we try to dress modestly, and the world is kind of getting away from that completely. You go, oh, look, it's a modest dresser. You know, must be a Mormon. Someday that may be true. Anyway, so I really thought, boy, what, did NPR specifically pick a protest being done in front of the Mormon temple? Because, you know, that's probably the most heated thing going on. Because Mormons have a background of being oppressed. Strongly. Ours isn't as oppressive as, say, like, the black race. You know, former slaves were much more oppressed, I think, than we were. But, you know, I think among any other group outside of blacks, I think Mormons are probably the most oppressed group of people. And voluntary group of people. These weren't people that were born, you know, born Mormon. Look, you can see it. They've got funny noses, or, you know, they've got three arms. No. People who chose to be, especially at the height of the persecution in the 1840s, actually throughout from 1830 to the 1870s, or maybe even 1890s, just being oppressed, and anybody who wanted to kind of start a ruckus, the easiest person to start a ruckus with was a Mormon, right? Because everybody would join in, yeah, we hate Mormons, yeah, Mormons are sick and twisted, oh, yuck, and, you know, states had declared extermination orders for Mormons. They didn't do that to black people. We had to flee Missouri because the governor, had issued an extermination order that Mormons needed to be destroyed. You would think that we were child molesters or stuff like that. It was a totally political move. The original settlers in Missouri, when Mormons started coming and in pretty large numbers, got very worried about the political ramifications of having Mormons in their state, that they would take over the judgeships, that they would be the sheriffs and stuff like that. And they couldn't tolerate that. Couldn't tolerate it. You know, Mormons were basically farmers and craftsmen. You know, they weren't soldiers. Weren't any of those kinds of things. So, yeah, it was like, hi, you really got it out. You know, it would be like Pennsylvania declaring war on the Amish. You know, and you're going, why? And you go, that was the question. Why? Why do people hate the Mormons? Oh, there's too many of them. That was the basic thing, was there were just too many Mormons, and it became a political issue. Mormons were also anti-slave, and Missouri was pushing hard to be a slave state. And, you know, it wanted to be a slave state. Some people put it at that. I said, I think that, among other things, slavery is usually a political ball, kind of the weapons of mass destruction of the 19th century. You know, It was just an excuse to do things. Anyway, to give you some background about how the Mormons feel about it, let me talk a little bit about polygamy, because I think it has something to do with this. Mormons practiced polygamy. Some Mormons did. It was done, you know, it was not a universal thing. It was done among some leaders of the church. It was mostly done, I don't know if it's good to say by revelation, you know, that certain people would take more than one wife. It seemed to kind of go that way. Anyway, that practice started in the 1840s, and it continued until, maybe the early 1890s. The practice of doing this. Many of the leaders of the church were jailed when the United States decided that they wanted to solve the Mormon problem. And, and the most heated way, you know, it's just like starting a war in Iraq. What's the way to scare the most people and motivate them for doing something that you really want to have done? You go, well, you can't, like, you do weapons of mass destruction, right? Whether it's true or not, whether it's really a threat or not, you know, it's just that whole feeling of, boy, you know, they could, you know, bad things could happen. So, you know, I think of polygamy as being the Mormon WMD. People didn't like Mormons, you know. I couldn't even begin to think of all of the bad reasons, you know. Satan doesn't like Mormons particularly. When you look back on it, people are stunned with what was done, sometimes in the name of government. And the United, you know, and these aren't weird offshoot governments that don't exist anymore. The United States government, the federal government, sent an army to handle the Mormons. They had heard rumors not started, I guess, by nice people particularly. Rumors that said, you know, you got a Mormon problem there in Utah. There's just too many Mormons. You can't have those Mormons together. Sent an army, sizable army, into Utah to look at what the Mormons were doing, you know. Bad things happen. I don't want to get into the Mountain Meadow Massacre. But, and not to put it off, there were mistakes on both sides. There were bad feelings on both sides. Wouldn't you have a bad feeling if you felt like your federal government was out to get you? Not to justify actions taken. Not to justify it, but just to say, hey, you know, there's some heat there. Anyway, the official word of the church, which I believe, of course, is that, and Wilford Woodruff, who was the prophet, at the time he was the fourth president of the church, he, you know, many of the church leaders were in prison for illegal polygamy. It was made illegal. Most people think that it wouldn't have ever been even brought up if it hadn't have been for Mormons doing it. There was other groups. I mean, the Oneida community was a free love community. They had kind of these really interesting group sort of marriages. I don't even know if they were really group marriages. It was just kind of free love. You could just have sex with anybody you wanted to. Young men and women were kind of coerced into having sex with older men and women because, you know, that was, I guess. I don't want to put a slant on it because I know how people put a slant on Mormons, you know, to make them look bad. So I'm not going to do that. I just found it interesting because I don't remember the federal government coming out and saying, oh, God, we've got to make a law against that and stop those people from behaving like that. Nobody bothered. Nobody bothered in that case. But boy, let me tell you, as soon as the Mormons did it, did something that was a little bit askew from what people thought was decent. Oh, my gosh, Becky. Do we have a problem? Anyway, so it was ended in the late 1880s. I think they finally, you know, there were some people that were still consummating these things against church policy, so church policy became very stringent about those people. You know, anybody who had already married, they could stay married to multiple wives for a time, you know, for the remainder of their lives, I suppose. But the church was not going to consummate any more plural marriages, as they're called in our parlance. So, but this was done, says, but it's very important to know how this decision was made. Most people think that the Mormon church bows to social pressure. You know, and it is, of course, looked at as a bad thing. Well, we don't really believe anything they really believe in, because they'll change according to political winds. People said that about polygamy when it was getting tough and heavy and people were getting sent to jail and prison for being a polygamist. We better stop this. And what Wilford Woodruff made very plain was that God showed him what would happen, that the church property would be seized. There was already laws that were seizing church property, that it was legal to seize church property of polygamists. You know, so much of the Constitution that says you can be, you know, you can feel secure in your homes and your papers and things like that. You know, that was thrown to the winds, and, you know, it was all in the name of making life miserable for Mormons. Maybe for other reasons. Who's to say? I don't know the motivations of those people. I don't want to know. Anyway, because it can't be good. And I don't want to explore that. Other people, I'm sure, have taken great pains to figure out what the motivations were. They can have it. I'm not interested. Anyway, he had this vision that showed what would happen to the church. Of course, it wasn't pleasant. But he said, even after God showed me that, the question still was there. If God tells us to continue the practice, we'll continue to do it, even if it's illegal and even if it's stuff like that. But God told him to that we should discontinue the practice. And we did. And that's it. We do have a tenet in our religion. It actually helps us quite a bit, which says that we believe in being subjects to kings, presidents, and rulers, I'm going to misquote. I can't believe it. You used to have this thing memorized. In obeying, honoring, and sustaining the law, you know, and it doesn't have any proviso in there. There is no proviso that says, unless it's a really bad law. It's not there. We are beholden to be law-abiding, even when that law tends to work against us. You know, it's just like me, you know. I'm surrounded by people who make changes to their houses, who build houses without proper permits, basically doing it in an illegal fashion. And when I get all weird about, boy, I wish we could change laws so that I wouldn't, you know, so that I could build a house the way I wanted to and I didn't have to live by the Universal Building Code, which pretty much says there's only about four different ways you can build a house. You know, construction techniques, stuff like that. You know, if you deviate from those, they won't give you a permit and they'll tell you you can't build your house. And people just look at me with that look that says, well, don't tell them you're building it. Just build your house. Quit asking for permission. And you go, you don't understand. I am compelled to be obedient. Even to stuff that does, you know, and they'll throw up their hands at me and go, you're just stupid. Haven't you learned yet? You don't listen to them. You know, they write laws, we ignore them. And you go, no, I'm sorry, I can't ignore them. I am duty-bound by God to obey laws, even bad ones. And, you know, it was reaffirmed where polygamy came up with. It was illegal. God said, discontinue the practice. I don't know if God said it because it was illegal. I don't know. But he said to discontinue. So we did. Anybody who is a polygamist now is not a member of the LDS Church. If a member of the LDS Church chooses to enter polygamy by marrying a second wife or more, they're excommunicated. They are no longer Mormons. They are not in good standing with the church. It's over. Nada. You know, people say, well, the Mormons really still do it. You go, no, they don't. People who claim to be Mormons do it, but they're not Mormons. If we find out they are Mormons, we immediately excommunicate them. That is the one thing that will get you excommunicated the fastest. Funny, but it's because there's been so many problems about it. And it is not what the church does now, what members of the church are allowed to do now. Okay. Now, I told you that to kind of give you some context. There's also another instance. In 1978, previous to 1978, the LDS Church did not give the priesthood to blacks. Of course, we were called bigots and stuff like that. There's civil rights movement, yada, yada, yada. And the church was starting to spread into places where there were a lot of black people. A lot of black people were starting to join the church. And, you know, everybody thought that it was a political decision to start giving the priesthood to blacks. It was struggled over very much by the Brethren, which is the First Presbytery in the Quorum of the Twelve. The prophet himself spent a lot of time praying about it and saying, Father, you know, we would really love for this to be opened up. There's a lot of good, we think, worthy men who are denied the priesthood because of this long-standing regulation. That came from God. You know, it was from early on. Cain was given a black skin for the intent and purpose that he wouldn't be killed, so you could identify him and not kill him. He was an untouchable. You were not to slay him because of what he had done. You know, and all of his descendants also had a dark skin, and they were prevented from having the priesthood of God. They weren't allowed to have it. And that, you know, now, Christians don't really listen to what... I apologize. I'll stop there. Mormons tend to keep following commandments until the commandments are either taken away or superseded. Adam was told in the Garden of Eden, Adam and Eve were told in the Garden of Eden, that they need to multiply and replenish the earth. And that's what Mormons continue to do. This commandment has not been rescinded. No matter what cultural things have come. So when people say, gosh, those darn Mormons, they're just breeding like rabbits. And you go, we do it because that's what God told us to do. Multiply and replenish the earth. You know, well, you don't have to do it single-handedly. You know, shut up. Guy. Asinine little children. Just annoying me. Anyway, you know, just little trite little things. Oh, boy, I really zinged you, didn't I? Woohoo! Me, trying to populate the world on your own. It's like, you know what? Shut up, infant. I expect that kind of idea from a 3-year-old. Sorry. Okay, so. Now you know why I'm not very, you know, why I have a certain problem with locals, by and large. And I don't want to say it as a local trait, because, you know, there are really wonderful people who have good attitudes. Many, many Mormons are locals. And that's great. I feel for their struggling of their boneheaded brethren, which seems to be the natural state of locals, and how it must be so embarrassing to feel like you're one of them. You know, I come from the same gene pool that they do. It's like, I feel for your personal embarrassment. Not that I'm saying Zenith or, you know, haven't got some pretty crazy ideas too. Anyway, so all this comes to what I think people outside of the church come to as the church being very politically pragmatic. And that they see the church as a force for conservatism, which I guess it is. Most Mormons are strongly conservative. Although I lean conservative, I am typically not conservative. I am libertarian. I want freedom. You know, if people will give me freedom, I'll gladly give them some freedom. And that kind of colors my whole attitude about gay marriage. I always came at it as a political issue, as a liberty issue. And when you come at it with a liberty issue, the best I could come up with when people would talk about it, it would either be strongly one side or the other on the issue of gay marriage, I would shrug. You know, hey, you know, they can do what they want. I don't know what it really matters. And I continue to do that. Now, I also take the stance of I will follow the brethren. If the brethren are dead set against gay marriage, then I will vocally be dead set against gay marriage. Even though, see, but that's difficult because they usually don't tell you how you should feel about in a political fashion. This is one of the things that used to bother me, you know, was that, you know, I don't care about gay marriage. I thought that was a conservative issue. And in not being a conservative, it didn't really matter to me. If they want to go up to the courthouse and have a little ceremony and they're kissing on each other all the time anyway, what's the big difference of them having a little kissing session on the courthouse steps for everybody to see? They all do it pretty openly now anyway. They're like, oh, it's a degradation of our society. It's an attack on the institution of marriage. I said, it doesn't affect my marriage any. But when I heard this thing about a bunch of gay, I don't know if they were couples or what, picketing a Mormon church in California, I took a new look at my perspective, and I have made a change. And my change is that I see what they're doing as an attack. And you go, well, it's an attack on marriage. And you go, well, no, well, that's okay. Sure. But I see a much larger attack going on here. It is an attack on the freedom of religion. What I'm seeing happen here is that gays are trying to, through legislation, through the courts, through basically governmental fashion, trying to force religions to behave a certain way. Mormons might be considered to be an excellent target because outsiders think that Mormons shift their will shift their attitudes according to prevailing politics, prevailing cultural norms, that the Mormon church can be altered by social pressure. And I can see from an outside standpoint where people would think that would be so in the case of polygamy, in the case of blacks getting the priesthood. Outsiders can definitely say, oh look, anytime they get any kind of pressure at all to stop some practice, they'll stop it, and they'll codify it in their doctrine too. Woohoo! So they were saying, hey, we can, if we put enough pressure on the Mormon church, they'll fold. And they'll start accepting gays. There will be gay marriages in temples, which I'm sorry, just horrifies me. As long as the Mormon church is the kingdom of God upon the earth, which is my knowledge and my belief, it isn't going to be doing that. Because it is absolutely counter to God's plan of happiness. It's absolutely against the whole idea of families. Gay people do not form families. They express their sexuality. This is not a family. This is your current sexual sex mate. You know, I don't care if it lasts your whole entire life long. That was what you guys shared. You may have been roommates, but that doesn't constitute a marriage that becomes a family. You can't do it. I mean, you can. Through legal means, you can try to put together something approximating a family. Lisa was bringing up the very salient point that gays can't propagate. Honest gays can't propagate. People who just screw anything that stands still long enough, they propagate fine. But it's not family. Ask anybody. You know, marriages fall apart when you have sex with somebody that you're not married to. You know, lesbians have children, but they have to have had those children by a guy. Or artificial insemination, or whatever. Technology and or politics. I don't want to be downtrodden, you know, Mormon speaks against adoption, isn't he evil? You go, no, adoption's fine. But the kind of, well, I don't want to get away from the fact that this is mostly a choice that got made in the past that has no redeeming value whatsoever. It is absolutely I consider it a deeply selfish act to be a homosexual. You don't put God first. That, you know, when people talk about, when Catholics especially talk about the sacrament of marriage, you know, it's one of the seven sacraments. We don't use that terminology, but we hold marriage as sacred, I think, as Catholics do. That one of the great things is marriage is something that you do that is ennobling, that where you put the needs of another person and God before your own. You know, marriage is as much about sacrifice as it is about love and having a socially sanctioned, intimate relationship with people. It's much more than that, of course. It also indicates that somebody is, you know, that you're willing to sacrifice for that other person, but not also that, you're also sacrificing your needs to what God is trying to accomplish. Bring spirits down to this world. Give spirits bodies so that they can live and have the experience of being here, so they can be tested like we are. Gays can't do that. To call what they're doing marriage is to say, okay, basically marriage is a big selfish act, you know. I don't want people to give me a hard time because I'm banging everything that isn't nailed down. Sorry, I don't mean to use really loaded words, but that's how I feel about it. Have sex with anything that stands still long enough. I've met very few true gays. I've met tons of people who claim they're gay, but have had sex with almost everything. Men, women, children, animals, tree knots. I don't mean to try to put pictures into your mind. I apologize if that's what you think I'm doing here. I don't mean to. I don't know a homosexual who hasn't experimented with being a bisexual. I'm going to have sex with just about anybody. You know, what they predominantly, at least began as, was oversexed people. You know, it's an interesting way to find a friend. It's an interesting way to find a partner, is by, number one, being as disloyal as you possibly can be to them, you know. And people call me really old-fashioned, and I don't have a problem with that, because frankly, I think it's a better way to be, is the way things used to be. Being modern, I think, is a really bad idea sometimes. You know, it used to be a really well-looked-on thing to save yourself for marriage. You wouldn't have sex with anybody or anything like sex until you were married. It was going to be your first time. When you have intimate sexual relations with somebody else, you don't have somebody else in mind that you've had sex with before. You aren't just the third or the fourth person. You know, sex is as casual as dating now. You're just going on a date. Oh, well, all right, why don't we just have sex? Oh boy, you know. But that's something special and sacred. God says so. I don't care what society says. But I see this thing. Outsiders seem to think that the Mormon Church will bow to social pressure. So I can see why gays would make the brunt of their attacks on the Mormon Church, because they think the Mormon Church is easy to be moved. Well, they stopped doing polygamy because people didn't like them doing polygamy, and we made a law. If we make a law that gay marriage is okay, well, the Mormons are bound, and they're just going to have to keep it whether they want to or not. And you go, I think you'll find that you're wrong. But they're not going to do that. My brother Joe, was much more strident about the gay marriage issue than I ever was. He sent emails to the whole family. He still did. You know, the last one I got was about Proposition 8 and how, at least the California members of our family needed to support it. Support a ban on gay marriage. Hopefully it was an amendment to the California Constitution. I don't know. I'm guessing it probably isn't. But it's still something to keep the fight going, to say we're not going to accept or consummate these kinds of marriages. This kind of stuff. You know. And I'll tell you, I think gays are fools. I think gays are foolish pawns in a game between Satan and God. And they're on the side of Satan. Now, they don't mean to be, but their hormones have impelled them. Their inability to keep from being ruled by their penises have put them in an unholy alliance with he who is evil, for the lack of a better way to say it. Everybody I've known who's gay, and I've known a few. Everybody that we've known, Lisa and I have known, who has been gay. There is one salient fact to know about it. They adopt homosexuality as their religion. Every one of them. Any of them who ultimately come out of the closet and say, I am gay, it takes on a religious tenor to it. Lisa had a friend who said, struggled mightily with the whole thing about his feelings and about how, you know, and tried to repent of them in the LDS church. You go to your bishop and you get help when you're having problems. About these feelings they were having. I can only suspect that these feelings came and he went and saw his bishop because it wasn't just feelings. He had acted on them. And one has to understand, sexuality is the glue that binds a marriage. That's why you should be careful how you use the glue and who you bind yourself to. That's important. That's why you should save intimacy until after marriage. Because it is. It's that gloppy, gooey stuff that helps you stay together when everything else in life is just ripping at you, trying to tear your marriage apart. This is one of the things that helps it glue together. It isn't the only thing, and it's not the only thing that can keep it together. It helps, though. God, it helps a lot. I'll tell you that honestly. And I don't want to hear stupid little asinine jokes about it either. Really angers me.
Oh yeah, Jason must know about sex. I mean, look at all the kids he's got.
Shut up! Asinine little children. I get really tired of just little childish things. I'm trying to obey God, and what do I get? A bunch of quote-unquote Christians giving me hell for it? Piss off! Pardon me. Really makes me angry. Okay, so, you know, it becomes a religion. And one of the basic tenets of that religion is that number one, everybody else has to join in. The whole point is everybody else needs to try homosexuality. That's the religion. That's the way it is. And I'm sorry, you know, people say, oh, but people are so bigoted, you know, we just want to adopt kids. And you go, I'll tell you what adopting kids means. I don't care how wonderfully they can paint it on the silver screen or on the TV screen or in any other media to try to say, oh, they're just like everybody else. They're raising that kid, and they're going to let him have the choice of whether he wants to be homosexual or heterosexual. And you know what? It doesn't even get to the point of making the choice. They're going to encourage the exploration. And that's when you get caught, is when you explore it. If your first sexual encounter is not on your wedding night to a person that you have given yourself heart, mind, and soul to, on your wedding night, says, you're going to have troubles. You're going to have weird conflicts. You're going to have problems. I don't care what it is. Your marriage will be tainted. You will not feel good. You will probably not be able to give yourself completely to that person. Because you won't have everything anymore. You will have given that up to some random person out there. And you can't get that back. You can feel bad about it. You can repent. You can feel sorry. And God can say, I won't punish you for this. But that isn't the big problem. The big problem isn't the punishment part of the program. It's the part that it's gone. You've lost it. You gave that to somebody else a while back. No matter what that thing was. And it's tainted ever since. And God can't, I don't think God can, you know, people say, well, it's God giving me a guilt trip here. And you go, no, you just have guilt. And God didn't give it to you. You gave it to yourself. God was just telling you, don't do that. Save yourself for marriage. It's that simple. What happens is, because I'm sorry, I've never known a homosexual who didn't encourage very young, tweeny-type kids, or even younger. Most pedophiles are people who are willing to have sex with all kinds of things. This is the same group as homosexuals. You know, it says, well, I'm not a homosexual, but I'm a pedophile. And you go, it's the same basic concept. It's the same basic thing happening here. Anyway, so, you know, and they say, well, gays can make nice, strong families. And you go, no, they can't. They can't do it. So because one of the main things that their children, the children that they perhaps can adopt, and gladly, a lot of places they are not allowed to adopt, thank goodness. Is because I'm sorry. The whole concept of, well, you need to experiment to find out what your sexual preference is. The only way you can figure out what your sexual preference is to have sex with a lot of different things. And then you can, you know, it's all that whole thing, well, you really won't know until you experiment and try to see what you like the best. Homosexuality comes from drinking a poison. You know, it's like, hey, how do you know if, like, arsenic will kill you if you've never tried it? You go, it's traditional. We just camp the whole thing that arsenic is really bad and it can kill you. It's a poison. Well, how do you know? That's kind of the whole thing with homosexuality. Well, you don't know if homosexuality is bad until you try it. And if that's the first thing you try, and I can't but begin to think that homosexuals, by and large, introduce the children in their charge to sex about a million years too early, because sex is their religion, you know? Oh, you know, it is a religion of personal pleasure. you know. You can say, oh, I finally found the person that I love and I cherish and I want to be married to them forever. And you go, okay, now that you finally found this person, I'd like to know, could you come up with some kind of a number as to how many other people you had sex with before you decided this was your best sex that you thought you would ever get? And if I introduced you to somebody who could give you more satisfaction, would you leave this person to go after that? And you know what? I think most of those marriages would fall apart. Because of what they're based on. They're based on sexuality. They have to be. The very act of saying, I am a homosexual, means one thing. You've had sex with a man or a woman. If you're a man or a woman, you know, you've already had sex with somebody of your own gender. And what's deeper than that? It means you've already had sex! You don't find out you're homosexual. Okay, if you're a man, and you say, you know, and you're married to a woman, you hear stories about this all the time, although I think it's quite rare. I think it's rare among the small percentage of people who are homosexuals. It's a rare story among them too. You know, even though I think the news media has interviewed as an example every single one of them. You know, married guys who decide, well, I'm coming out of the closet, I'm gay. You know, and their poor wives just break into tears. And you go, you know what? He didn't decide he was gay until he's had some sexual partners who are men. It says, this has nothing to do with how you feel. You know, this is that gets mixed up in it. That gets mixed up in it. You know, these are people who mix up a generous portion of sex with other things that are made to kind of draw you in. You know, things that would normally be considered good. You know, caring for one another, looking out for one another, being there. But I equate it with how you break up a marriage in the first place. Marriages are hard, you know. I equate it predominantly with men who quit their wives because either they don't look good enough or well, we've kind of grown apart and yada, 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 stuff like that. That this is just an interesting sounding excuse for saying, I didn't give enough to my marriage, or we didn't work on our marriage hard enough. And so, you know, I can try to make it look better by saying, hey, you know what, I figured out I'm gay. And you go, you didn't know, you didn't figure out you were gay. Either you were having an affair with a man, which I'm sorry, that's adultery. It's a real twisted up form of adultery, but it's adultery. Having sex with somebody you're not married to. And you might as well just call it that, because it's more honest. Oh, I'm gay, so I'm divorcing my wife, and it's not her fault. She's a wonderful person, and I intend to be a friend forever with her. But no, I can't live this lie anymore. And it's like, excuse me, if you had an ounce of real caring for your wife, you would put her first. And she would tell you no. You know, it's just like having an affair, you know. Well, I just didn't feel like I was getting enough love and caring and concern from my wife. So I went out and found somebody who did. You know, gee, isn't that a good justification for it? You know, society kind of frowns on that, but it certainly smiles on, I'm coming out of the closet, I'm gay, you know, destroy your family, your poor children are just like, what? You twisted up pervert! And how'd you come to this decision? And, you know, of course, they're not going to tell anybody that. Well, for the last 5 years, I've been having wild, crazy, hanky-panky sex with another guy. And you go, that's how you decide you were gay, is that you wanted that relationship more than the one you had. It didn't have anything to do with what gender everybody was. It was about that. It was about wanting to flee one relationship for another one. And sex was just kind of the sauce in which you chose to do it. Now I'm going to keep this one on. Usually I take off my homosexuality episodes. I've probably done about 7. Only one of them has made it because I was really, I really, really kind of backed off on it. This time I'm not gonna. This time I'm not gonna. I do think most committed homosexuals are Zenus who got turned at the in the school playground, in the locker room, and everything else, because they transferred the fact that they were really different, and that in school especially, that's what difference is translated into. What, are you gay? And it's like, you know, okay, you know. There's a term called questioning, and I don't really like the term because it doesn't really mean what it says. It tries to really whitewash what's happening. You know, you always have the whole, you know, when you list out all the people who like to get around gay issues together, it's gay, lesbian, bisexual, and questioning stuff, and they love to kind of throw this at young teens, tweens, really young people, because really young people are really starting to get a sense for bigotry, for feeling, you know, they really are quite cognizant of unfairness issues, and that's really what they're pandering toward. Is the whole thing of unfairness. That's, I mean, and they're using the same tactics for the gay marriage issue. It's unfair. How come heterosexuals, I'm not a heterosexual, okay? I am a Lisa-sexual. I have sex with Lisa Jane Tomplay Nemro. That's the only person I have sex with. You can't call me a heterosexual because I've never had sex with another woman. Either. I only had sex with one person. And I intend to keep it that way. Don't call me a heterosexual. I'm not. I'm not a homosexual either. I'm intimate with one person. And she knows it. And she's grateful for it. She doesn't have to feel like she's in competition with somebody. She doesn't have to feel like any given person, sorry, any, in her case, woman, walking down the street that wiggles her butt at me, that woman all of a sudden becomes instant competition to her. You've noticed that. It's like a Jerry Springer world, you know. You look at that girl, I tell you, look at that girl! And then the fight starts, right? Because a guy can't keep his eyeballs in his head when he says, you know, I'm committed to one woman, therefore I don't even look at other women particularly. You know, women have relationships with women. Men need to go and do other things and stay loyal to their wives and not get into these kinds of problems. So I don't want to hear, you know, they'll say, what is your sexual preference? My sexual preference is Lisa Nemro. Period. I wouldn't know how it would be with anybody else. I've never had sex with anybody else. And I'm not looking to find out if there's greener pastures out there. That's loyalty. And I'm afraid to say it is a virtue in very low quantity in our society, as indicated just on a sexual note by the fact that sex is nothing. Sex is like going and drinking water or going to the bathroom. A biological function that must be, you know, that gets serviced like any other. Pathetic. I find people who have that attitude to be pathetic. So, when I say, you know, that there's surely gay people who are very committed to it because they're actually Zenus, who are, I'm sorry, very weak-willed and pathetic. And they need to pull it together. And what are you loyal to? Your penis? Is that your basic loyalty? Let's go get service, buddy. I'm sorry. If it sounds gross and disgusting, it's only because I have to bring it up, because so many people think that that's perfectly fine. It's okay, go ahead, do it. Gay marriage, insofar as I saw or I heard on the radio this morning, is an attack against God. It is people saying that God is, or thumbing their noses at God, and are trying to affect the political system to try and force the LDS Church to join them in their perversion. I consider it the same as Gadiat and Robber communications between them and the Nephites toward the very end of that nation. I will make a prediction. I will even go so far as to call it a prophecy. Economic downturns will not destroy our nation. Barack Obama, who just got elected president, he will not be the destruction of this nation. I will prophesy to you that the legislating of perversions and the special, and it will be crafted very well, the pushing of perversions upon religion will be the destruction of our nation, of all the nations on this earth. That will be the end of governments that is sometimes prophesied. It was prophesied amongst LDS. That's what's going to do it. It isn't anything else. It isn't socialism. It isn't communism. We've all been able to kind of survive those things. It's this thing. It is the institutionalization and, make no mistake, the whole thing for gay marriage is the forced institutionalization of perversion aimed directly at destroying religion. A new litmus test to say you can't be a declared official religion in this country. You know, you can't have tax-exempt status, whatever other perks churches tend to have. You cannot be a legally acknowledged church unless you propagate gay marriage unless you accept gays into your thing. It's coming. This is one of the battlefields for it. And that's why, even though I'm a libertarian, I tend to stay out of these kinds of things. People can do what they want in the privacy of their home. You know? If they want to be perverted, sick, twisted little children, that's their business. It says, but they will not, you know, bore themselves like boll weevils into the very fabric that makes America great. One of the biggest, most important things that makes this country different from all the rest, at least at its founding, which I honor with all my heart, is that there will be no law to interfere with the free exercise of religion. And that's exactly what they plan to do by a backwards way. This is a war on... And it was really obvious. They weren't picketing the Catholics. They weren't picketing the big Baptist church in California. They were picketing the Mormons. It's a war on the Mormon church. I don't know if they're doing it because they think the Mormon church will be the first and the easiest to fold. They will find out that we are not. It's a war, and Michael Payne is a larger war against all religious belief that has a problem with homosexuality. But I will take it as a personal insult to my religious belief as a Mormon, because they're coming after me and my children just as much as the Missourians gave the extermination order. Well, the governor at that time, I don't want to blame the people particularly, there were some good people there, I'm sure. Just as much as that governor made the extermination order and put official government backing behind it, that's what's happening here. Gays are putting trying to put official government backing behind the destruction. You know, you can say, well, it's against the family, and you could see it that way, but it's a much larger issue, much larger. Anyway, I'm sorry. That's it. This is Jay Nemro. I'm going to have a phone call. I've got to take it. Have a good day.